Hey everyone, Alex here. Let me tell you about USERP. That's USERP.io. If you're a growth stage or public company and SEO isn't driving enough pipeline for you yet, or maybe you've hit a growth bottleneck, you need to talk to this crew. USERP has spent 10 years helping some of the biggest SaaS, fintech, and healthcare brands in the world turn organic search into a legitimate customer acquisition engine. And now they're doing the same for AI search. We're talking companies like Monday.com, Robinhood, CrowdStrike, Wiz, Binance, and dozens more that you've heard of, from Series A all the way to publicly traded. And the results speak for themselves. They helped Monday.com go from 600,000 to 1.2 million organic visits leading into their IPO. They built hundreds of high-authority links and content assets for Early Bird, a fintech app, driving over 20,000 acquired users before Early Bird was acquired by Acorns. And they've helped Onboard rank for 13,000 more keywords in their space, tripling their organic pipeline value in a single year. What makes USERP different is they don't just publish content and hope for the best. They engineer content assets that rank and convert, backed by links on sites like HubSpot, Gartner, and G2. Here's the deal for Superpath. Mention Superpath when you book your strategy call at userp.io, and they'll add 5 bonus high authority link placements to your first month on top of your package. That's userp.io. Hey everyone, Alex here with a little bit of a different episode this week. We are going to be talking about community building with Millie Tomedy, the founder of Generalist World, a professional global Slack community for generalists. Millie is based on a remote island in Scotland, so when I learned she was going to be in New York for the week, I nabbed her for this in-person conversation. So less about content marketing this week, but still, I think worth a tune in for conversation about building and managing professional Slack communities. And it also comes with some behind the scenes conversation about ideas I have for the future of Superpath. Hope you enjoy. Great to have you here, Millie. Welcome to New York and welcome to Content Briefly.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here.
Well, I just kind of want to jump into it. This is going to be a fun episode on community building. I have looked up to Generalist World for a long time and I think it's really cool what you're doing with your space. You know, we're both community builders. I think we see a lot of communities that fail. I'm curious, what makes Generalist World work?
I think you're right. I think when I first started building community, air quotes, it was my first one. I had never built community before Generalist World in like the, you know, commercial sense of like, this is the business. And I think that actually was one of the best things that could have happened to me because I didn't come in with any like preconceptions or like notions of like, what should a community be? I've just kind of been going off like instinct and like literally looking at my own community. I live in a very small community of less than 200 people and kind of taking the values and the behaviors and the way that community operates and kind of putting it into the Generalist World context. And I think why a lot of communities fail is because they actually don't begin with the why. They begin with the, well, it depends, right? And maybe it's a product community and it's like, you begin with, oh, how could this community make us money? Or like a top-down kind of forcing of, how can we create this like, you know, the KPI, the metric is like, we have to have 500 ambassadors by November. And it's like, that actually, you can't like strong arm community like that. It's an emerging process.
And what is the why for Generalist World? How would you describe it? And has it changed over time?
It actually hasn't really changed over time. The reason for being is because I am a hardcore generalist, have been my whole career, and have always felt like a super odd duck. Didn't know where I fit, didn't feel like I fit anywhere. I was like trying to fit into different communities, and I always feel like I had to put a mask on to be like, okay, because I can wear the hat of, say, content or product or founders or female founders, whatever it might be, but I was like, I just kind of want to be like me, all of it. And so this seed was that, yeah, I was living on this very remote island. I was job searching. I eventually got a job working for a tech startup and they gave me the role director of miscellaneous, which in some respects was like the coolest thing to ever happen. But in others, I was like, oh, I feel even more alone because I don't know anyone else who has a job title director of miscellaneous who lives on an island with less than 200 people. Like, where are my people? And so the original why for Generalist World is what happens when we bring together people who have these nonlinear squiggly paths. My hunch was that magic might happen when you get generalists in a room. And I was like, in the worst case, I might make a couple of friends. So that was kind of the why.
So I think one thing that's really interesting about generalist world is it's very bottoms up driven, and it probably comes out of kind of what drives you there, which is like bringing people together and then seeing what arises from that. You know, you're several years into this at this point. What it, we said, 5 or 6 years?
So we started in October 2022. So like, okay. Three and a half.
Oh, wow. I have. You've grown it so much in such a short amount of time. That's awesome. But in that time, how have you been able, as it's grown and scaled, to kind of keep that momentum? Because I think one thing I talk to other community leaders out there, and it's something I'm thinking about a lot with SuperPath too. It's like, we're at like such a fun number right now. We have about 320 pro members, which is like, you know the people in that space. Mm-hmm. Obviously, generalist world has grown a ton, and I can imagine how the energy that you brought to it initially with like, hey, we're just bringing friends together, like, mm-hmm. we've got this awesome group of people. Now you're at the point where I'd imagine like a lot of people don't know a lot of the other people in that group. How do you build the momentum to keep that going, to keep that vibe alive when you have that, the kind of scale that you've had?
Yeah, it's a science and art is what I'm learning. And it's been a ongoing everyday series of experiments to be able to like keep this culture that we've created. And so when I look back at the beginning, 2022, it was very much me in the center, mm-hmm. being like, I'm this kind of figurehead of like flying this flag. People were buying into, to be honest, my like abstract made up idea of like, oh, I think we need a space for generalists.
Yeah.
And as time goes by, I was then able to hire Edja, who runs our community. The space became kind of more her shape. And now it's really funny. It is really not either of our shapes. It is truly the shape of the members. And the best thing we've ever done, and the thing that we will continue to do for the rest of Generalist World's history, is making it member-led, mm-hmm. and like truly standing by that. I think a lot of people say like, oh yeah, we're like member-led, but then don't give people agency. Mm-hmm. Well, don't actually feel like they have pathways to be able to create the things that they want to create.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before jumping on here, but that's kind of one of my big initiatives. And SuperPath is trying to make this a little bit more of a member-led community and find the pathways to let people host. And you know, we're exploring that with our Spaces concept, where we have different members leading Slack channels. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, as you kind of look back at the journey of going from, hey, I started this space, to like letting really elevating hosts and leaders within the space, like any lessons that you've learned mm-hmm. along that pathway about like what makes that work really well?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned, both as a founder and a community builder, is the work that you have to do on yourself.
Yeah.
To be able to like let go of control. I think that's honestly the big thing. At the beginning, it's like you get twitchy when you're like, oh, okay, this is my baby and I care about it so much, and I need to let go of that control and trust that the people I brought in.
That's not easy. I mean, this is it's a brand that you built that's very much, and we haven't talked about this, but tied to your personal brand. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, huge social following that drives the whole Generalist World brand. Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying is like you're turning over a lot of what has become your identity to folks that you just like are giving control to and saying like, take this brand, hold it, and do something with it, right?
Like, yeah, it's something that I struggle with, to be honest, that like the line between what's Millie Tomaty is personal brand and what's Generalist World, and where does that all link? I think one thing I'm really strong on is that I actually try, and I actively try, to not make it my identity.
Yeah.
I think at first, I remember distinctly remember this moment of walking into a meetup in Lisbon, and someone ran up to me and they were like, are you Generalist Millie? And I was like, oh no. Oh no, we're not going there. And it was funny, completely funny at the time. But again, the work as a founder and a community builder is to be like, no, I'm Millie. Yeah. And like the community is separate and Generalist World is separate. But they are of course linked, and they are of course adjacent and complementary. And like Generalist World simply wouldn't exist in the way that it does if I hadn't spent all this time and like effort putting into building this kind of personal brand.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wanted to shift gears a little bit to talk. You've got several like unique structures in Generalist World. One of them is that you've got a lifetime membership. Mm-hmm. So folks pay at the beginning and then you introduce them to this group. You're bringing them in right now in cohorts, and you've obviously got a group where there's a lot of things going on. Could you tell me a little bit about, one, the reason for your kind of lifetime structure, you think about that, and then two, like, how do you onboard people to this? I mean, first off, a space that is broad in its concept, being generalist, right? Like, that's the whole thing. Like, there's so much going on. People are coming from different angles. Like, I think about it from a content marketer standpoint. It's a hard enough challenge to be like, how do we introduce content marketers who very much understand these conversations that are happening in Slack to what's going on here? That's a hard challenge. But like, you're looking at like, hey, I'm coming at it from like, I'm an operations person that's a generalist. I'm a market. Like, you've got all this. How do you get them into the right spaces where they get the value out of? So those are a couple different questions there.
Remind me of the first question.
The first question was lifetime membership.
Yes, okay.
Rationale behind that.
Let's start there, because that's kind of a spicy topic. It's not the done thing. And this is also when you, back to your original question, why do communities fail? I think communities fail because people treat them like a SaaS. They're not a SaaS. They're not software.
Yeah.
They're people. They're humans.
Yeah.
And the sooner you can get away from treating them like this kind of product per se, then the deeper that community is going to be and the more real and authentic it's going to feel. So the lifetime membership was it probably the most terrifying decision I've made. I think that's maybe when we first connected.
We did. We talked around that time. Yeah.
It was around that time. I was sweating and... But it was, talk about the like science and the art. It was the art part of community building where I felt it in my gut that that is what we needed to do. The reason being, we'd been running for maybe like, what, 2 years at that time, maybe a bit less. And the worst part of Generalist World was when people didn't renew. And there's a zillion reasons why someone might not renew. Maybe they just lost their job. Maybe like life's got busy. Maybe they had a baby. Like life happens. And it felt wrong to me, and I use that word like quite intentionally, something felt wrong in my body when I was like, all right, well, get out. And because the community of Generalist World, it is a professional community, but really it's a big group of friends.
Right.
That's kind of the difference. And because there's not just one archetype, it's actually probably a marketer's worst nightmare in terms of like, we don't even have an ICP. The ICP is like generalists, you know, mid to senior. We have, you know, professors in Australia and chief of staff in San Francisco and founders in London and everyone in between. And so the thesis to go for a lifetime, there was kind of a few things driving it. The first is that I personally wanted to be a part of these people's journeys forever. That sounds intense, but I was like, I love hanging out with you guys. Like, this is so fun. I would love just this to be my like my network of people. So from a selfish perspective, I was like, I would love this to be a long-term thing. And my hunch was that when you make something not recurring, then people become more invested. They can invest knowing that, because, you know, let's say you and I are in a community, we become really good friends, and then for whatever reason, you churn. It's kind of like when someone gets laid off and like then they just disappear from like the company Slack channel. You're like, I didn't even get to say goodbye. And I was like, I kind of want to like completely remove that feeling. So if you're in there, it's like skin in the game over the long term and everyone feels the same. The second big reason was ops. Tell you what, it's much easier just to have a lifetime membership. Like,
oh, I bet. As someone with a much smaller community, the amount of time you spend doing subscription ops is
awful.
Wild.
Yeah,
yes.
But for me, awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm much more on the like creative, chaotic, visionary side rather than like the nitty-gritty ops. And I'm kind of just trying to create this like business and company that I really love working in. So I'm like, let's like reduce those like annoying ops as much as possible. And the third reason we were able to do Lifetime, and the reason I decided the moment to do Lifetime when we did, is because we had turned on sponsorships for the first time. If I hadn't had that sponsorship revenue, I don't think I could have, like, in, you know, in a responsible manner, felt confident enough to turn on Lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, I think as a community manager, the scary thing about that model is just not being able to have that guaranteed revenue to be able to support your community. And the, like, you know, I know how many people I can hire part-time to help out with different things because there's a predictable revenue stream in there. It's like, you know, here's our budget every month and we see that growing, and that's awesome because you can reinvest it into the community. But like, what you're doing is saying, okay, each cohort, we've got to, you know, bring in this many more people and we've got to sign this many sponsors. But that's such a cool commitment that you've made.
And to that point, I'm just kind of clicking to, this is another reason that it worked, is because if we didn't have our newsletter that was growing like wildfire, there's over, I think we're coming up to 60,000 subscribers now, I again wouldn't have felt so confident to do it. But it's like we have this constant growth funnel coming from my personal brand, coming from the newsletter, that's constantly bringing in new potential members. Mm-hmm. And so if we didn't have that, I also would have felt a bit shaky going to Lifetime.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So when it comes to bringing together all these different people who are joining for, I imagine, a wide variety, you know, they're trying to find connection, but like your professor in Australia or your chief of staff in New York, those are very different people. How do you introduce them to the community in a way that makes sense for them? And then how do you like weave together these bonds of people that are, you know, maybe from an identity perspective, they consider themselves generalists, but, you know, day to day, they're working on very different things.
Yeah. So for the first 100 members that I welcomed, I did a one-to-one call with them. And that was really tiring by like the 80th call and 90th call. I was like, oh my gosh. So that wasn't sustainable, but it was incredibly valuable. I got so much information about why someone is joining, who these people are. For the next, say, 600 members.
Why do people join? What's like, what was the biggest?
Yeah, I think why people join, the kind of the crux of it, is that because they feel really different. They feel really different. They feel like they don't actually belong anywhere. They don't fit into any of the traditional boxes. And I think one of the things that community can really solve is like one of the oldest human feelings ever, and that's belonging. And I think belonging gets like thrown around a lot, but I think at our core, I know I can speak for myself, at my core, of course I want to belong. I want to be a part of my group. I want to be a part of my people, because when I belong, that's when everything else unlocks.
So bringing these people together.
Yes. So the first 100 was a one-to-one. The next kind of 500 or 600, I kind of switched to an async where I would just send people personalized videos. And it was amazing how much people appreciated that. Like it would take me 90 seconds per video. I would sometimes do, you know, 100 videos plus per cohort. So it would still
wild.
Pretty hardcore. And people would be like, I can't believe this is not AI. And now my team is sending the videos. So anytime that there is an opportunity for us to do something that doesn't scale and that is personalized, I'm like, let's do that. Let's do that. There's a few core things that I think make Generalist World really different, and particularly in the onboarding, people feel that, is in those personalized videos, whether it's me or one of my team doing it, I'm like, we need to talk about the Calm community doc. It was the first, like maybe one of the first five documents I ever wrote for Generalist World. And again, coming back to just like, how do I want to live? Like, what is the space that I want to create? I wrote this Calm community document where it's like, we are a Calm community. What the heck does that mean? It means things like, there is no expectation that you should always be on. Like, I understand that life fluctuates. When you need us, we're here. If you need to tap out for a bit, that's also okay. So it's kind of these like principles of how to create a calm space. And now with our onboarding, because we are at a scale where it's just beyond what me and my very small team can do, we bring in community guides every cohort. So these are kind of like OG members. To be fair, not even OG. Sometimes they were members from the previous cohort. And we'll ask, usually around 10 members. And we're like, do you want to be a guide? And the response is always just like the most heartwarming thing ever. They're like, what an honor. Like, I would love it to be a guide. And so for the first month, we all worked together to be like, how do we create this space and how do we introduce people and invite people into the space that we all love and we all value, and we can kind of teach them the culture. And often that a lot of the culture, some of it's written down and it's very explicit, but a lot of it isn't. A lot of it is just like a feeling.
Yeah. Little bit of like shared history and vibe and that kind of thing. So having a, like, not just being like, here's our culture, here is like the lore of our community written down, that'd be like, not give the same impression as like an actual human, like introducing you.
And like, think about it, right? Like if I was to arrive in a community and there's 10 people from that community who are like putting their hands up to welcome me, I'd be like, huh, like they really care. So it's like a culture of calmness, but also a deep culture of care.
switching gears a little bit to like the community product itself and, and the different programs that you run. So we've talked about like you have a very member-led community. People propose things all the time. They're running things all over the place. What is something that you're really excited about right now, a program that is either you're leading or a community member is leading right now that's going really well?
Yeah, I think is probably our masterclasses is a really simple example where for the first like 2 or 3 years, I overcomplicated it within an inch of its life where I was going and getting these external facilitators and paying these external facilitators. And then we were like, hang on, we have like the coolest talent, the most smart and interesting people right here within Generalist World. What if we just paid them? And so now one of our values and our kind of core thesis is if we need to hire, we always look to the community first. And so my entire team that I was mentioning have all been hired from the community. It's like, it's just the coolest talent pool. And then same now with the masterclasses. And the masterclasses have a double-edged benefit in that our members get paid, so great, that's awesome, love that. But then it's also a way for them to connect with other people in the community. So it like deepens bonds. And because I think when you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of people in a community, it is really hard to be like, how do you make this space where people can actually genuinely connect? Not everyone is a typer. A lot of people aren't typers. They don't want to read like long walls of text. So a lot of our programming is having like a smorgasbord of ways that people can connect. Like another example is one of our members he's like really into art and crafts. And so every Friday now he's hosting like an art meetup, and anyone who's into that, and like it might be people who don't want to go and, you know, interact in the AI or no code or marketing kind of one, but they love art and they're like, actually that could be how I find my way in. And I've seen this time and time again, you just need to give people a way in, and then they can deepen into the community. I don't think you can force it.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been one of these threads here, is talking about your ability to turn things over to the community and not try to like enforce this kind of top-down structure from yourself. How do you deal with the fact that you've got a global, this is something that we've talked a lot about in Superpath, is like we've got a global audience also. You're obviously doing in real life things now, you are doing live events. I think one of the things that we talk about, like how can we better support folks in other time zones? Like we're probably 60% North American. It's just enough to be like hard to justify doing some of our live events in other time zones, but want to find ways to support those folks. How do you manage this, like, you know, if you're investing more in real life things? And I know while you're here in New York, you're doing a whole lot of in real life events. And I'd imagine people in other cities are like, you know, I wish you could do that kind of like, come to my city, do this sort of thing. How do you think about like how to support programs that serve a global audience?
Yeah.
And obviously this is like you being in Scotland and on a remote island, like I'm sure very top of mind for you all the time.
Totally. I remember maybe like 6 months or a year into Generalist World having this like kind of regret that I didn't just start in one place because global is just hard.
Yes.
Really, really, really hard to get right and to make everyone feel included. And because we're, you know, bootstrapped, self-funded, I didn't have budget to be going and like throwing and hiring people all over the world. So that was probably me 6 months in having a little panic of like, oh my gosh, how do I like accommodate and invite people into this? Now we've kind of ridden the wave and the audience is big enough that it's okay. And I think again, like, it always comes back to member-led. So you don't need that many people in a place to have the you just need a few like really effective and excited members in that place to get something started there.
What's something that you're really excited about right now generally as you look forward to like the next year of Generalist World across anything that you're doing in the community?
I think one of the things I'm excited about is this piece of the puzzle, which you and I connected on about a year ago, that I've like always been kind of dipping my toe in, but never quite diving into the full pool of it, which is around jobs and recruitment. So like our bread and butter is community content events. That is what we're known for. That is what we do so well. But this kind of missing piece of the puzzle has always been like, okay, and then how do we get more generalists making a fantastic living?
Okay, this is great because we haven't talked about this before, but this is a space that I'm thinking about a lot right now too.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to hear what you have to say about
it. So
you launched this new job board, right?
Yeah, like, this is like I have avoided the job board, like, I don't know, world, like the plague, because I was convinced that they didn't work for generalists. I was like, I think for the generalists, like, most people I know get jobs through network, they get jobs through, the job gets created for them.
Yeah.
They didn't exist before.
And I'll jump in with my context here too.
Yeah.
So like I ran, so in my previous community, people operations job board, a curated job, like exactly what you see all the time, right?
Yeah.
And I think we were a little bit early to it and that worked out in a great way. And that became like a huge source of like our newsletter signups. And, you know, we spent some extra time on it, making sure it was really good. We've obviously in Superpath also had a history of having a curated job board. There's a lot of those out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as we rethink about our job board for Superpath, I'm kind of facing the same thing where I'm like, first off, I don't think curated job boards are as effective as they were even 3 or 4 years ago, because you have, you know, this crazy AI world where it's a messed up recruiting process. And people, you know, you talk to anybody that's actually looking for a job and they say, hey, like, if I don't get to this job in 4 hours, then it's useless. And what's really helpful is these in-network connections. And so as I think about this, I'm like, I don't know if building a curated job board again is the right move. And so with that context, very excited to hear what you're learning along the way here.
Yeah, and I agree. This is a question that I'm playing in at the moment. So I guess to give the context, we have a newsletter. We send it twice a week. On Fridays, it's a podcast at the Generalist World Pod, check it out. And on Tuesdays, it's the Job Opportunities. And so the Job Opportunities newsletter has been going since like the beginning of GW. And it's just like 40 to 50 jobs that I find anywhere, Twitter, LinkedIn, like, and they're always a bit, they're generalist jobs.
Yeah.
And I've trained my algorithm to feed them to me because I comment on every single one. And people are like, where are you finding these? I'm like, LinkedIn just gives them to me now. So it's funny because it's one of those things that has been in front of me the whole time, but we spend all this time each week, you know, many hours curating and making this job newsletter really beautiful. And I was like, huh, what if I just like made a version of it that's public? Like, so we just have one database, one goes to the newsletter, one goes to this job board. And I was in New Zealand, I'm from New Zealand, and I was at home over like December, January, February, and it's just like a Saturday morning, and I was like, oh, Claude Code, like, it'd be kind of cool if like that could like build the job. I'm non-technical, so it kind of seemed like a far-off thing. And I was like, oh, but what kind of job board would it be? I was like, it's just a job board for weird jobs. And this is one of the many experiments of Generalist World. And this one went insane.
Yeah.
It went completely bananas. I think it's well over 1 million people that have seen it now. And what this tells me is from the talent side, people are screaming out for jobs that are not so narrow, that are not so rigid, that are not putting them into this like box where they can't be creative with. And the gap that I'm seeing is organizations. I just want to shake them because I don't think it's in anyone's best interest. Sure, some jobs need to be highly specialized and that's awesome. We know how to do that.
Right.
That's not a problem. The real opportunity that I think organizations are missing out on is that the world of work and online and knowledge work is changing so fast that when you can have people who come in and have these more fluid roles and can like connect dots across teams and have more agency to like be the creators or the innovators, that's when you're really going to be able to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah. So the, what I'm hearing is like the problem that you think you're solving here is that you're connecting, like generalists don't have a good way to find jobs that fit generalists. Like, unlike if I'm a content marketer, I'm searching, it's like, I mean, you can, I can search content marketing manager as well as you can on LinkedIn, right? And so it's like, what value am I providing there? But your ability to curate these like jobs that are truly hiring for generalists is solving that pain point of, I'm a generalist, I want a job that allows me to like flex those things and doesn't force me into this, you are actually going out and finding those.
Yeah.
So the curation, I feel like that's actually the difference where it's like, if I'm curating content marketing jobs, it's like, what value are we actually adding here? Versus like, that is actually legitimately the problem to solve with your community.
Yeah, that's a really interesting difference. And when I, like, as some of the examples of the jobs that I'm seeing, and I know I was just bagging on organizations not being, like, having these flexible jobs, but I am seeing every week more jobs being posted, and the keywords are kind of like unorthodox, non-linear, non-traditional is now the new, it's like the new thing people are looking for, these non-traditional paths. And like Stripe came out with this amazing one that they wanted, they called it like an unorthodox writer. Mm-hmm. And they specifically in the job description were like, we don't want someone that fits in a box. We want, and I was like, oh, goody. Like, we're moving in this direction.
Well, I have to imagine it's a really, like, and we haven't, somehow we've gone through this with barely talking about AI in any way, which is great. But, you know, I think you mentioned Claude Code once, but like, actually wild that we've made it this far. But I'd imagine that, I mean, something that we're seeing on our side, like I'm working with content marketers, like there's a lot of, like, we had a very clear, defined job for 15 years for a content marketer, and that's changing overnight. And like the jobs that we're seeing, I would say, are probably more generalist or like more, let's take a step back. Like, what is a content marketer? What does it mean to like build these content systems? I imagine that's got to be a pretty good moment for generalists generally. Like,
generalists generally. Say that 10 times fast. I think so. Like, I think when I started GW a few years ago, it certainly was not as accepted or sexy to be like, I have a nonlinear path. I don't fit in a box. It's like, oh, what's wrong with you?
Right.
Like, no, you got to climb the ladder. You have to like squeeze yourself. And what do you do? Tell me what you do. Give me a two-word answer. Where I do think, and I am aware of my own bias and my own bubble, that it is changing. And I think the big, there was two big kind of crux moments. And the first one was COVID, where everyone started questioning, what the heck am I doing with my life?
Right, right.
And the second one is obviously AI. When we're like, oh, I have 10,000 PhD level specialists in my pocket and it costs me $20 a month. Oh, what does that mean for how I work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what, I mean, and this is like what we're seeing in our community as well, is like we see a bigger movement towards generalism. Like we've got, you know, these content marketers that have, you know, backgrounds in writing and editing and content strategy, SEO. And it's interesting, like even the people that are, you know, have stayed at the same company are being asked to do more generalist things. Mm. It's like now you've got to be like figure out how to like wrangle AI building with these different tools. And also like even mediums. I mean, we're seeing, we have a community of a bunch of writers who are now being asked to do podcasts and video and expand. And I just think even from my perspective, like it's a very cool time for generalists.
I think it's also worth saying, if you're a specialist listening, if you've spent like, you know, 15, 20, 25 years of your life getting amazing at one thing, it's not the end of the road for you, because what a specialism, what an expertise can do is it can amplify the rest of your work. I think the danger is when you get so stuck in that box that you're not like, can't put your eyes up and see, oh, okay, like how, what else could I do here? So I think if you have these expertise, if you have these specialisms, you're actually still in a great position.
Yeah.
If you can then also lean into the human skills like adaptability, creativity, innovation, all of these, judgment, discernment. So it's like, I mean, if I had a dollar for every time someone pulled the specialist versus generalist argument on me, I'd have many, many dollars. And my stance has always been the same, and that's like, we need specialists.
Yeah.
And in fact, ironically, we have loads of specialists inside generalist world.
Yeah.
Make it make sense, which is why the ICP is always just like such a hard one to nail down. But like even myself right now, I'm specializing in community building, 100%. I'm spending all my days for the last 4 years becoming pretty damn good at it. But the reason that I still hardcore resonate with the generalism is because maybe I'm not gonna do that forever.
Right, right.
It's for like a season, it's like a spike.
Yeah.
I'm going to like go really, really deep in community building and I'll pop up. It's like, then I became a quote unquote creator. And I was like, that wasn't part of the plan.
Right.
Like, that's just a spike that has emerged.
I resonate with that so much. Like that's, you know, my own career path is like, I have specialized in different things at different points in my life.
Sure.
And it is not a cohesive story. I'm like, broadly, I've done go to market things, like sitting as a co-founder, like going really deep in the like HR tech people ops world, now in marketing, like done sales. I've like, you know, just done like everything. And it's like, in the given moment, like right now, similar to you, I'm thinking like I'm specializing in community building and running a small business. Like sure. That is my focus. But like that might not be 10 years from now, right?
It probably
and that's
be.
Very exciting to like have that space where you're full of other people like that. That's really cool. I want to ask you a question here at the end of we've talked about both of our communities, so both on air and off air. Do you have any advice for Superpath and what you think that we should be doing?
Well, let me ask you this. What is your why?
I think our why right now for Superpath, and this is one of the early things I was trying to figure out as I jumped into this business 6 months ago, is, you know, why if people join this, like, what are we trying to accomplish here? And I think the big thing for our space is navigating the world of content marketing and careers in content marketing as it evolves rapidly right now and making sure you're staying ahead and supporting each other. So it's a little bit of, you know, feeling like you've got a team of people who are also navigating this same like challenging environment with you, like staying ahead and just like supporting each other. So, you know, for me personally, it's about, I love just being able to work on a community product where the goal is to bring people together and like totally. Bring closeness. Like it comes from that same place. I think we have maybe a bit of a more defined mission around like this moment in sure. AI and how it's changing this industry and how we kind of continue to stay ahead. So those are the big things that I'm thinking about for this community. And so it's like, how do I build the programs? How do I build this space to better deliver on the results of people feeling like they've got their people and that they're working ahead?
And next question, so I get a really good context, is what is the blocker? Right now, what's your hypothesis on the blockers to that happening?
Well, I'd say like first off, I think there are a lot of things that are going really well. We're growing and I think we're delivering a really solid product. I think a few blockers, I mean, one is just, you know, resources constraints. There's always like so much, and we talked a good bit about this, but so much I want to be working on. Yeah. And, you know, I've got an awesome team of contractors, but I'm also the only full-time person. There's only so much I can do there. And then also bringing new people into the space. I think we've also talked a lot about the energy that you've got in generalist world. And I think we've got a space that's been around 6 years and we kind of have people that understand it, that get it, that get a lot of value out of it. But really bringing new people into that space and ending them with the energy that they feel the value out of the gate and like delivering on that value, I'd say that's probably a blocker for us.
Okay, so right advices to begin. The first is do less but better.
Yeah.
Which is the advice I wish someone had shook me with at the beginning. And we were saying just as we walked into this co-working that like, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse to have minds like ours. I think we kind of see the world quite similarly where it's just like opportunity, like all the things we can do. And often, well, what I found, it's a hard lesson I keep learning, is that it's often the obvious thing. It's like I keep going in this full circle and then I come back and I'm like, oh, it's bringing generalists together. It's what I thought of day one. So they're kind of some things. And in terms of like bringing new people in, one of my favorite pastimes is to check. So when a new member comes in, I will go and click on Beehive and I will see how many emails that person has received. Sometimes it's hundreds. Sometimes it is hundreds of emails before they're like, yes. And so there is real value in being able to like step back and take the long-term view and be like, okay, community, it's not a SaaS. People take a long time to be like, is this the place for me?
Right.
And being like patient, being patient that to really attract the people that you want to attract and have them trust that this is the right space for them, it takes time to build.
Yeah. I think the other big thing I'm going to take away from our conversations is like being more comfortable letting go of the structure and like handing things over to the community. I think that's something that's like very scary, but I think that has, you know, as we've talked about it, been so much of the success recipe for you is that everybody feels ownership over the community and it's not your community and your structures, but it really is a communal effort to create and maintain this space.
Yeah, I think what Generalist World does very, very well is we create these shared values. And so as long as everyone is aligned on those like shared values, what the actual thing is, that the how of how you get there, the actual programming, the actual events, whatever it might be, is neither here nor there, really. It's like, as long as you have that underlying deep value alignment, the rest kind of takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Millie, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you?
They can find me LinkedIn. I'll be posting there every day. TikTok, Instagram, everywhere. Millie Tarmady, I'm the only one.
Awesome. We'll share that in the show notes.
Thank you so much,
Millie.
Thanks, Alex.